listener production. Slide on in. It's the Matt and Alex all-day breakfast.
G'day to you on this Anzac Day. It is the 25th of April, which is in Australia, is where we pause to remember a bunch of Australian people over the years who have sacrificed themselves in conflict. And it's always just such a weird day to think about, Matt O'Kine. I mean, it's growing up, I just always used to think it was so weird that, you know, older people had seen a world in which, you know, either they were there and that happened, or even just looking at the newspapers during that time, it's quite remarkable that we lived and can still, you know, walk on the same world that they do.
Well, we certainly are very privileged today to chat to someone who was absolutely there through some very tough times indeed, but who came out of it with a really interesting perspective on life and the experience. And that's what this chat today was all about. We were lucky to chat to a former World War II prisoner of war, Jim Kerr, all the way back on the 23rd of April in 2021. And we thought we'd replay this chat again today because it was just really, really insightful and an incredible chat.
Yeah, and nod to the diggers on a day like this instead of our usual antics. And also give a shout out if you're still currently serving. You know, it must be difficult being overseas, stationed places. You could be serving Australia over there and, you know, listening to the podcast, getting a little taste of home. So for that, we thank you as well. Now, Matt, it's our absolute honour to talk to an Australian who experienced the war, one of the big ones, World War II, back in the 40s. His name is Jim Kerr, and he joins us on the line now. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, pleased to be with you.
Thank you so much for chatting to us, Jim. Now, you were enlisted in the war when you were 15, World War II, and you spent 3.5 years in a Japanese prisoner of war camp.
That's correct.
What was your life like in the moments before you were enlisted? Paint us a picture of 14-year-old Jim.
In those days, of course, things were very, very simple. There was never much money around. My father worked with the PMG, so we had a steady income coming in, but my life was very, very simple, and it was school and playing with my mates and getting up to all the usual things that boys of that age do.
What did you do for fun, Jim? Were you a cricketer? Did you
write? We did all things. We, like football, we'd make a football out of newspapers. We'd play cricket. We'd go on yabby. We'd build a billy cart. We'd make a kite. All those things we did on our own initiative, and this is how we made the fun for ourselves in those years. And my childhood was very, very happy. We never knew such a thing in those days as restaurants and holidays and yeah. Things like that were just something that were just beyond our financial capabilities, of course, so... It was a very simple and a very, very happy life. I feel that the young people today don't seem to know what to do with themselves without looking at a mobile phone all the time.
Well, I feel guilty about that sometimes, Jim.
Things have certainly changed.
I can't go to the bathroom without thinking about the phone, you know. It's terrible.
Things have definitely changed. But, yeah, you describe you're a happy, happy child, and you were still a child at 15 when you enlist in the war. Can you tell us about that decision being made and what your expectations were before you actually experienced the real thing?
I always had an ambition to join the Navy, but my standard of education wasn't... high enough to pass the exam. So I knew that you could join the Navy at 16 and a half as a boy seaman. So I said to my mother and father, when I turn 16 and a half, I want to make the Navy my life. You went in for 12 years. Whoa. So they were quite happy to for me to do that. So I just, once I left school, I just paddled along waiting until I was 16 and a half. But unfortunately, the war broke out and the Navy put their age up to 18. And I was only 14 when the war broke out in September 1939. So there was another couple of years I would have had to wait. Then I saw a friend of mine who I knew was around my age in army uniform, asked him how he got in the army. He said, "Oh, just for my job." So I went home
simple
with
as that.
Dad, and Dad was the First World War digger in the trenches, and I said, "I want to join the army." Well, they just laughed at me. So I kept at them and that, and so in the end they said, "Well, go up the recruiting depot, they'll laugh you out of the place." But they didn't, and when the recruiting officer said date of birth, said 5th of 2nd, 1920. But I was born on the 5th of 2nd, 1925, of course. So I was 15. I joined up in August 1940, and I was 15 and a half.
Wow. And what did once they accepted that, what did your dad, who had experienced a war in the past, what did he think of that?
Well, I think once he saw me in uniform, he was proud of me, of course. Mm. And life was very, very hard for them in the time I was a POW because I'd been posted missing. And so that was a terrible worry for them before they finally got word that I was a POW.
Yeah, Jim, I mean, tell us about what a prisoner of war is, because I don't fully understand the conditions that a prisoner of war has to live in, how you even become a prisoner of war. Where were you when it happened, and what was life like after that moment?
I was on Singapore when Singapore fell on the 15th of February 1942. I'd been cut off and I was still in Malaya behind the Japanese lines. And on the 20th of February, we met this well-educated Indian, and he said, "What are you doing?" We told him we were making for the coast. We're going to try and steal a boat and make for Sumatra. He said, "Do you know that Singapore fell?" We said, "No." He said, "No, it's 20th of February. Fell 5 days ago." So and we decided to give ourselves up and didn't know whether they were taking prisoners or not, but at any rate, he brought the Japanese out and then we became POWs. So I finished up my first POW camp was in Kuala Lumpur in the main jail there. So it was on the rice diet then, of course, rice 3 times a day. Reasonably well fed in Kuala Lumpur because there was plenty of food there, of course. You got to remember that with the Japanese, they didn't sign the Geneva Convention for the treatment of prisoners of war, so they didn't have to or didn't need to abide by any of the restrictions that would have been placed on them by the convention. So anyway, October 42, I was taken down to Changi. I was in Changi until April 1943, and then I was sent up to Thailand to work on the railway.
Are you able to put into words what a day on that railway was like? What were you doing there, and what toll did it take on you?
Well, daylight till dark. Our section of the railway was a small cutting, not as big as Hellfire Pass, but a small cutting embankment. And you're allotted your, usually they had a measuring stick, a meter measuring stick, and they would measure out a meter by a meter and a meter deep, and that's what you had to dig out. That was your ration of the quota that you had to do for the day. So we were there from dawn till, from daylight till dark, and we took our rice out with us for lunch. There was no extra water at these work sites, so the water that you got, it filled your water bottle in the morning before you went out, had to last you all day.
Mm.
For anybody who's been in the tropics, know that it's very humid, you perspire very freely. And when you're doing the heavy manual work that we were doing, you can imagine the perspiration. And even in the camps, there was no water storages of that there. Well, you got your ration water at night, a cup of, they call it a coffee, but how they made their coffee was to throw rice into the cooking pot, burn that, then throw water on that. The water turned black, and there's your coffee. Instant
Jim,
coffee.
Are you telling me that you had to drink a burnt rice latte?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah. You'd get charged about $7 in some of the places these days with that.
So that was our cup of coffee of the night. And yet in those 3.5 years as a POW, I can't remember anybody asking me or me asking anybody, look, I'm thirsty, can you give me a drink? We just adjusted to the fact that was all the water we had. We had to make it last.
Oh, it sounds absolutely incredible. It sounds really tough.
The railway was 415 kilometres in length. It took 15 months to build. And there were 60,000 prisoners of war slaved on the railway. And of those 60,000, 16,000 died. And 1,600 of them were Australians.
Mm.
Plus the fact that they brought a lot of Asian labourers from Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia, up to work on the railway. And they estimate, it's only an estimation because there's no actual records kept, but they estimate that over 100,000 native labourers died, as well as the 16,000 prisoners of war. Now, that line was built in 15 months. It was built through virgin jungle across a major river and also through rocky hills that had to be blasted out and then dug out by hand.
What did going through an experience like that, Jim, teach you about yourself and more broadly about humanity and the human spirit, being able to come through something like that and then live the long life you've been able to live?
We never ever lost our spirit. We always kept our spirit up. We never ever lost our morale.
Can you remember ever laughing during this? I would just think you'd be sucked of joy. It'd be so depressing, but you managed to get through it with good humour as well.
Oh yeah, I can remember a mate and myself. Sometimes we'd have a little bit of a sing song of the night. This after we'd come off the railway, of course.
So do you remember the song?
Oh, I can't know.
Oh, come on, Jim! You don't want to give us a one so much.
But I'll tell you a little joke I had though. I used to say to the boys, Look, I've had this. I'm going to go up and see the Japanese commandant. I'm going to tell him I'm underage, I should not be here, and I want to go home. So that always got a bit of a laugh. Yeah.
Well, that is some incredibly dark humour, Jim. I'll give you that, and being there, because you were underage. You were just a boy going through this incredibly awful experience, but you managed to get through it. And we appreciate you having a laugh with us right now today on All Day Breakfast.
Before we let you go, Jim, just let us know about what it was like when you got out of the camp. Were you able to finally see your parents again and some of your other family? And were they obviously relieved to hear from you?
Well, I was overseas for just over 4 years. And as I say, I was posted missing before Singapore fell. So that was a worry for my parents, of course. But just to come home and see my family again after over 4 years and survived what I'd survived. It's hard to explain.
Yeah.
Well,
it's hard to explain.
I can only imagine.
You've lived to a ripe old age now. Is it, what do you want Jim Kerr to be remembered for over this time? Because that was a largely, traumatic experience, I'm sure, but you would have gone through so much.
Through my wartime experience?
No, for Jim Kerr, the man, the human being.
What you've achieved, since then, or, if that is the defining part of your life.
I've had a good life since I've been home. I've been one of the lucky ones. I came home in reasonably good health. And I've managed to keep that. There's only another fellow and myself left alive from my unit now, just the two of us. And he's just turned 100. I'm 96.
Oh, you're a spring chicken compared to him, Jim.
Yeah. No, I've had a good
You should have kept your fake age, Jim. You'd be 101 by now.
You know? You would have already got the Queen's letter.
I must revert back to my Navy days. So this will absolutely rock the socks off you. When I came home and I was discharged from the Army on the 14th of December 1945, which was a Friday, on the Monday morning, I walked into the Navy recruiting office and joined the Navy for 12 years.
Oh, wow.
But because I'd been a POW, they undernarred whether they'd accept me or not. So by the time I was taken in July 1946, they'd broken it down to 2 years. So in that 2 years, I got married. So I'd done my 2 years. I'd realised my boyhood ambition of being in the Navy, so I left after 2 years. This is the part that I love. I was a prisoner of war in late 1945 of the Japanese, and I went to Japan in 1947 on the destroyer HMAS Quickmatch as part of the occupation forces. Now, how's that for turning the table?
You did, Jim. You absolutely did.
But no, I'm up there as not there overseeing me. I'm overseeing them.
Wow, that's incredible. And this is something I would find difficult to wrap my head around as well. How do you feel now in the year 2021? You know, the world has globalized. Allies have shifted over the years. Do you hold any bad feelings? Because I feel it would be extremely difficult to let go of those kind of things.
I do get asked, do you hate the Japanese? And I say, no, I don't hate the Japanese. I will never forgive them the unnecessary suffering that was inflicted on sick men through lack of medical support, equipment or whatever. And I'll never, ever forget. I'll never, ever forget what they did. But I will not use that word hate, because hate, in my opinion, can be like a cancer. It can eat away at you, and you're the one that is suffering from that hate. Mm. Or they're just getting on with life.
Mm. Jim, we can't thank you enough for everything that you shared with us today. It is so, so incredible to hear your story and to understand what you and so many other people went through. And we appreciate your time here today and, of course, everything that you stood for back then. Mm. And, yeah, we'll catch you next time.
Hey, well, thank you, Matt and Alex. And I've got the greatest respect of being an Australian soldier in the Australian Imperial Force. And I'm so proud of my fellow Australian POWs. They were men above men, and I've got the greatest admiration for them.
Well, Jim, thank you again. We really appreciate it. And we'll let you go now. But, yeah, it's been awesome to chat. And, yeah, hopefully we can talk to you again.
No, my pleasure. I'm pleased that I was able to contribute.